Good morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. Early voting is through the roof nationwide. It is estimated that 1.5 million people in Tennessee alone voted early during Tennessee's two-week early voting period. And people expect that many voters at least to go to the polls on Election Day, which is November 4th. I guess you figured out what we're going to be talking about for the next half hour. It's our last chance to do so before we make one of the most important decisions we'll ever make. Back once again, Dr. Rob McDaniel, Associate Professor of Political Science. Thanks for being with us, Doc.
Good morning, Jenna. It's always great to be here.
Yes, always fun. And this is one that not even the pollsters can really figure out, at least not the ones I've spoken with. Dr. Jason Reinecke, who's the associate director of the MT poll, says he's not even really sure whether the Bradley effect, which is the so-called phenomenon of white people saying that they don't mind voting for a black candidate and then doing otherwise, kicking in. He says we're going to learn more from the exit polling than we are from the pre-polling, but all of the polls, by varying degrees and percentages, have Obama on top by a wide margin in the presidential. Is there any way McCain can rebound with so little time left?
It's possible. I think if you look at the polls from what I've seen, there has been some variation. The upper end has Obama ahead by low double digits, by 12, 13 points. There was a New York Times CBS poll that just came out that has Obama up 52 to 41, so 11 points, and again, that's on the high end. On the other hand, there have been some polls like Fox News, for example, that have had Obama only up by 3. And AP had a poll fairly recently that had the race down to only a couple of points as well. The differences between these polls, and it's not really that they're getting that different responses from the people they talk to, the real differences in the polls are how they weight their expectations for who's going to vote and who's not going to vote. When you do one of these polls, you're not necessarily going to get a representation of the voting electorate as it is. You may have more Republicans who you happen to call. You may have more minority voters who you happen to call. And so what pollsters typically do is they weight their polls based on their expectations of what turnout is going to be for various different groups. And for example, in some of the polls that have been most sympathetic toward John McCain that have only had him down by a few points, if you look at the internals of those polls, they tend to assume that the numbers of Democrats and Republicans voting are going to be roughly equal, or, for example, in that Associated Press poll that evangelical turnout was going to be something like 45%, when in 2004 it was just 24%. On the other hand, I think that you can argue that there are some similar effects going on in the opposite direction with some of the polls that have been most sympathetic to Barack Obama, including New York Times and the Pew poll, which has been consistently one of the most favorable to the Democrats in this race. So if you look at all of those polls, I mean, I don't think there's been a single poll that says McCain's going to win. The question is, where is Obama's lead? And I think if you put together the daily tracking polls, that Obama has a lead of 6, maybe 7 points overall. That's probably a good estimate, because if you take out the most extreme polls on either end, you've probably got a good idea of what's in the middle. It would be, I think, very unusual if McCain could cover that gap in the last couple of days of the election. I think historically, at least in recent elections, the polls have been relatively accurate in terms of who's going to win. In this election, we see more variation, because in a change election, and especially with all of the new voters that Obama may or may not be bringing in, we don't know that our old assumptions about who's going to vote are correct. But still, polls have had a relatively good track record in recent elections. And I think because of that, it is a big uphill battle for John McCain. And if it turns out that he wins, I think that we could argue that something like the Bradley effect is taking place. I would be surprised at that. I think that there are conflicting claims, conflicting arguments on whether the Bradley effect ever existed. And for those of you out there who haven't kept up with this as much as those of us who are obsessive with politics have. It's named after Tom Bradley, who was a mayor of Los Angeles and ran for governor of California and appeared to be up in the polls by a substantial margin prior to Election Day in the early 1980s and ended up losing to George Dikmejian. And there's debate about whether or not those polls were, in fact, even very accurate. And
because there was an anti-gun issue on the ballot, and that drew conservatives out, and that is the argument made against the existence of a Bradley effect.
That's right. And there are other races where something like that may have taken place. I think of Doug Wilder, for example, running for governor in the state of Virginia and not doing as well in the actual vote tallies as the public opinion polls tended to show back in the early 90s. But recently, there doesn't appear to be much evidence of this. If, for example, you look at Barack Obama's vote totals in the primaries versus what the polls suggested he was going to get, they were pretty dead on. They were very accurate, with the one exception possibly of New Hampshire, in which it looked like there was a late break toward Hillary Clinton in reaction against some comments that Chris Matthews had made that were interpreted as being sexist. Similarly, in the Harold Ford Senate race in Tennessee in 2006, Harold Ford was polling about 3 points down going into the race, and he ended up losing by about 3 points. And that was in a southern state, the kind of place where you might expect something like the Bradley effect to be meaningful, and it turned out that that it wasn't. And so I think that the main debate is currently whether there ever was a Bradley effect. And if there was, if it's disappeared in the last 15 years, and it seems to me that in either event, the likelihood that the Bradley effect still exists is slim. So I wouldn't expect that to factor in, but we'll see. I mean, that, you know, every once in a while an election really surprises us.
The most recent rhetorical tack that McCain and the Republicans have been taking is that to vote for Obama is to usher in an era of the new left, because he will join forces with Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi and Senate Democratic Majority Leader Harry Reid, and it will be an overwhelming lurch to the left for America. Is this going to gin up the Republican base, which doesn't like McCain, and get them to go out there and hold their nose, as it were, and vote for the Republican they don't like?
Maybe, but it doesn't seem like a very inspiring argument to me. It doesn't make any real positive case for the McCain-Palin ticket. It's really a negative case. And in effect, if you think about it, what they're saying is this. Vote for us and we'll create gridlock and make sure nothing gets done. I don't think that's really what American voters are looking for in this election if you look at all the polls. And for example, the most recent New York Times CBS poll said that 85% of Americans think that we're on the wrong track. Now, that is a strong change number. That's about as strong a change number as you can get. George Bush's approval ratings in that poll were 22%, the lowest recorded approval ratings for any president in the history of polling going back to the early 20th century. This certainly has the hallmarks of a change election, and to have your closing argument be vote for us and we'll make sure that we create gridlock and nothing gets changed and nothing gets done, that seems to me to have the whiff of desperation about it.
Let's talk about the battleground states, because both candidates have been in Ohio and Pennsylvania and other places, spending lots and lots of time there. Even McCain has been spending time, even, and Palin have been spending time in red states that they thought traditionally, according to the conventional wisdom, would be almost a solid lock for them. Are the battleground states, the state-by-state polls, showing that these places are closer than one might expect, or is the Obama lead in the national level being reflected even in these purple states?
I think it's even more than that. I think that Obama's lead in the national polls understates how well he's doing in the battleground states. And in some ways, you can get a sense for this just by looking at what the battleground states are. You would expect the battleground states to be a mix of states that went for Bush and a mix of states that went for Kerry, given that 2004 was a very close election. Bush won by 2.5 percentage points in the overall popular vote. It was the smallest margin in history of any president winning a second term. And the Electoral College was similarly close. A flip of a state or two, a flip of Ohio, would have thrown the election to John Kerry. So given that, in a close election, you'd expect them to be fighting in battlegrounds roughly of even number, that had gone Democrat or Republican in 2004. And yet, if you look at that map, it's almost all Republican states that they're fighting in. The only Democratic state that McCain appears to be actively campaigning in is Pennsylvania. And all the polls suggest, or almost all the polls suggest, that Obama has something like a low double-digit lead in Pennsylvania. I think the average is that he's got about a 10-point lead. Now, there was one poll, something of an outlier, that suggested that Obama had only a 4-point lead there. But I think that McCain is going for Pennsylvania mostly because he's got to do something. He's got to take one Democrat state off the board, and it might as well be Pennsylvania because it's a large state, and he's hoping that he can appeal to a lot of conservative, rural, white voters who historically are uncomfortable with black candidates. He's been very much appealing to those voters, but it hasn't seemed to make any difference in the polls. I don't think the polls have really budged. And there have been some things that have happened in Pennsylvania that may have stepped on his message. And one of these, and again, to some extent, this is beyond his control, is the young McCain campaign worker who faked a racial attack on herself. She claimed that she had been mugged at an ATM by a 6'4" black man who then carved a B into her face with a knife.
It's always the imaginary black man.
The imaginary black man, and claimed that she'd been beaten up and that he had done this only when he saw that she had a McCain bumper sticker on her car. And as he was beating her, he said, "That'll teach you to vote for Barack."
And both McCain and Palin extended their sympathies to her before she confessed that she had lied.
That's right. A complete hoax. And, you know, every once in a while something like this happens. And obviously it was a case not of the campaign putting this together, but of a mentally disturbed young woman who had had a history of fabrication, deciding that she could do something desperate and maybe make a difference. And it unraveled fairly quickly, especially because the bee carved in her face was backward, as if she had looked in a mirror and done it herself. And, you know, again, that makes the McCain campaign look bad. And they're not completely innocent on this, because once that story hit, the Pennsylvania McCain campaign ran with the story and hyped the racial angle. And then they lied about how much they had done that, and McCain himself was somewhat disingenuous in terms of how much of that had happened. And so I think it just generally made them look bad, made them look like they were off their game, and they were trying to take advantage of a situation that turned out to be a fraudulent one. And again, they weren't involved in actually putting her up to this, but it didn't look good for that campaign. And so I think that that's the kind of thing that McCain desperately didn't want to happen.
That's the sort of thing that does not look good even to those white rural voters in the battleground states to whom McCain is attempting to appeal, because it smacks of desperation.
That's right. And I think that it reinforces two concerns that a lot of people have had about this McCain campaign, especially recently, which is that it has been pandering to racial fears of a lot of rural white and older voters. And that at times it has gone off the reservation and fueled the fires of people who are a little bit unhinged. And you know, I mean, there have been widespread reports of this, that at times McCain and especially Palin rallies look almost like Klan rallies, that people shouting out "terrorist" and "kill him." And if you've seen any of the footage of crowds going into the McCain campaigns, they're just very angry and they scream out "socialist" and whenever they see an Obama supporter. And
until recently, neither McCain nor Palin has done anything to tamp that down, until at a rally, McCain had to correct a lady who said that Obama was an Arab, and he had to take the microphone away from her and say, "No, ma'am, that's not correct."
Right. I think that he was confronted with a situation where somebody said something directly to him that was so beyond the pale that he had really no choice but to step in and say no and correct her. But aside from that, McCain and Palin haven't really been doing much to tamp down those fears. And in fact, Palin very directly has been saying at her rallies that Obama pals around with terrorists. And now they've used a number of guilt by association tactics, in particular the fact that Obama was once on a committee with a guy who in the 60s, when Obama was an 8-year-old, had been involved with a radical anti-war group. But more recently, they've gone after the fact that Obama happens to know a Columbia University professor named Rashid Khalidi, who happens to be Palestinian. And Sarah Palin has been using this as if it is some nefarious association, when this guy is a very mainstream college professor who just happens to be Palestinian. And in fact, a foundation that McCain heads up
gave him money,
hundreds of thousands of dollars to research opinion among Palestinians. And so, you know, this is a very mainstream guy. And even McCain has now compared Obama knowing this guy to a kind of neo-Nazi association. And it really is deeply offensive. And I think it's the kind of thing that looks like it is inciting violence, inciting anger. That's the kind of thing that I think a lot of neutral observers are worried about. And, for example, it's one of the reasons that Colin Powell has been so concerned about the Republican Party's current drift that he came out and very publicly and very eloquently endorsed Barack Obama last week.
And went out of his way during that endorsement to assert that we should not get carried away with this anti-Muslim fever that has been in which some people have been absorbed ever since 9/11. The plot that the ATF foiled with the two neo-Nazi skinheads who wanted to assassinate Barack Obama can be argued that they were already inclined toward that ideologically anyway. However, I understand from Lexington, Kentucky this morning that a University of Kentucky student and another man have been arrested on charges of hanging a life-sized likeness of Barack Obama from a tree on the campus.
I think there's been a fair amount of that. And there was a story in the Nashville, Tennessean just on Friday that had a billboard that appears in a town in Missouri that depicts Obama as a kind of Aunt Jemima wearing a turban, accuses him of being pro-terrorism and pro-abortion and a whole range of things. And it's really deeply, deeply offensive. And it's a billboard that has been, you know, up in this town for a while. And it clearly is based upon, you know, a deep-seated racist kinds of prejudices against black people. And in some ways, the most recent McCain campaigns have tried to fuel this, that they've been arguing that Obama giving a middle-class tax cut is a kind of handout. They've been running commercials saying that this is welfare. Now, that doesn't make any logical sense, right? McCain is giving tax cuts. He's just giving them mostly to the wealthy. Why is that not a handout? And why are Obama's tax cuts that are geared more toward the middle class handouts? I think it's very clearly an attempt to stoke people's racial fears that an Obama presidency would take money away from white people and give it to black people, and those black people are lazy and undeserving. It really is a pretty toxic campaign theme, and it's one of the reasons I think that there's been a tidal wave of prominent conservatives jumping off the McCain bus, a phenomenon that's come to be called the Obamacon phenomenon. Colin Powell being the most famous example of this, but not the only. Christopher Buckley, who's the son of William F. Buckley. William F. Buckley was the founder of the modern conservative movement. His son Christopher was a columnist at the National Review and is a internationally renowned novelist. He has never voted Democratic in his life and came out and explained that he was voting for Obama, and as a result of that had to resign from his job with the National Review, which is the most prominent conservative journal of opinion in the country.
Founded by his father,
that's right. And they're not the only ones. Doug Kamik, a prominent constitutional scholar. Charles Fried, one of the most important conservative constitutional scholars in the country, a professor at Harvard University. He was Solicitor General for Ronald Reagan, which means that he oversaw all of the court cases that the federal government was handling. The Solicitor General is often referred to as the 10th Justice on the Supreme Court. He announced that he is voting for Obama because he simply does not trust McCain's judgment. He's seen him as erratic during this campaign. And like many other people in the conservative movement, he sees the choice of Sarah Palin for vice president as simply not credible.
Before we let time slip away from us too much, the infomercial, Barack Obama's done his own advertising lately. According to AC Nielsen, more than 33.5 million people watched it. You were one of them. I was one of them. What did you think?
I thought it was very well done. One of the most important things about that ad was that he didn't just make it about Obama. In fact, it was about America. It was about a number of specific families from a variety of states in a variety of circumstances who nonetheless are all struggling with the current economy. He focused on the problems of job loss and of health care. It was very moving, and he was able to narrate their stories in ways that suggested he understood who these folks were, and he had very specific plans designed to address their problems. It was, I think a lot of people commented on how technically well done it was, but thematically I thought it was also strong, and it countered that depiction that a lot of Republicans are trying to put out there, that Obama is all about himself, that his campaign is a kind of vanity project, unlike the great self-sacrificing reformer John McCain. And I think that what Obama tried to show was that he is a calm, rational, balanced candidate, that he listens to people and their stories, and that he is prepared to govern in their name and not in his name. And I thought that was a very powerful message, and it was well done. Now, we don't know yet how much effect this is going to have on the race. I think, if anything, the main effect is going to be that it helps to drive the narrative over the last few days, so that rather than focusing on a lot of these smear attacks from the McCain campaign, the guilt by association, the racial coding, and all of this, that instead we focus on what Obama is going to do in a positive sense. And in that ad, he never mentions McCain. He never mentions Bush, although he alludes to the failures of the last 8 years. He never mentions Republicans. He simply tries to present his understanding of what is happening in the country right now. And I think that a lot of people connect with that, especially when he's able to put this in the context of his own family and his own family members struggling with insurance forms at a time when they really need to be focusing on their health.
And that's something a lot of people can relate to, regardless of socioeconomic status or anything else. What about the effect of on the downstate candidates? Liddy Dole is in trouble in North Carolina. Saxby Chambliss is in trouble in Georgia. Norm Coleman is getting a big challenge from Al Franken in Minnesota.
How about that?
If they lose, if these prominent Republicans lose, is it going to be attributable to Bush and the economy or to Obama and his coattails, presuming that Obama has coattails?
I think it's really hard to separate those two things. Political science, when they study elections, usually say that the things that matter most are not so much the candidates, right? Political scientists tend to be minimalists on campaigns when they look at election studies. The things that matter most are the popularity of the incumbent president, the length of time his party has occupied the White House, and the state of the economy. All of those things tend to cut in Obama's direction. And so you would expect this to be a good year for Democrats, and it looks like it is. And if you want to focus on the Senate, for example, in some ways, Republicans are getting unlucky because of the seats that are up this year. The Republicans have to defend 23 and the Democrats only have to defend 12. And as a result of that, all of the Democrats are safe. There's not a single Democrat who is running for Senate as an incumbent who is in real danger of losing their seat. On the other hand, there are lots of Republican seats that look like they might change over, some by retirement, some by incumbents looking like they're going down. And I think right now a good bet would be that Democrats pick up 7 or 8 seats in the Senate, although they may lose Joe Lieberman, who's currently an independent who caucuses with the Democrats. There's talk about Democrats kicking him out or him even just walking out on his own if the Democrats deny him a committee chairmanship, as I think you would certainly expect them to after he's backed John McCain in this presidential race. So I think that it's both of these things. It's the Bush economy, the Bush failures, combined with the charismatic appeal of Obama and his get-out-the-vote operation. I expect Liddy Dole to go down. And part of that is also because she's run just an awful campaign.
And an awful ad. I mean,
a despicable ad, calling
her opponent godless.
That's right. And in fact, having an impersonator fake her opponent's voice to say, "There is no God," when her opponent is a longtime church member and Sunday school teacher, somebody whose religious and Christian credentials are beyond question. And it's just really, really repellent kind of stuff. And I think hoping that desperately that voters were stupid enough not to find out what was going on. And I think there's going to be a big backlash. against that. And Kay Hagan, who's Lydia Dill's opponent, has run a very effective ad accusing her of bearing false witness in a way that I think picks up on an understanding that a lot of Christian voters have, that there's something basically wrong about that. Now, Al Franken's race is much closer. I think the polls suggest that that one could go either way. Al Franken may have a very narrow lead, but it's going to be tight.
You've got a third candidate in there who is sort of the wild card in all of this.
That's right. When you have a third-party candidate, you don't really know how that's going to shift the race. I think it looks like the third-party candidate has generally helped Franken by siphoning some votes away from Norm Coleman. But Norm Coleman is a guy who should be in danger based upon the state that he's in. Minnesota, very moderate state. It's been a leaning Democratic state for the last couple of elections. It's now a strong Obama state by probably 10 points. And Norm Coleman has been very closely associated with the Bush administration and has also been involved in a scandal where he's been taking free clothes from contributors, and it makes it look like he's a bit of a dandy who is living off of the largesse of his wealthy contributors.
Well, you vote for him, Al Franken. the old Saturday Night Live skit. Whither the GOP? McCain's camp and Palin's camp are supposedly fighting. They're now leaking uncharacteristically nasty things about one another to the press. Palin is being called a diva by people in McCain's camp. Palin herself has not ruled out the possibility that she might have a very bright future in the Republican Party. She's looking in that direction, seemingly. However, there's a fellow named Mitt Romney who's over here going, "Yoo-hoo, remember me? I'm next in line." With all of the gaffes and stumbles and vitriol and backbiting and scapegoating within the Republican Party, which is ordinarily so unified, where does it go from here?
Good question. I think it really has been entertaining to watch some of the back and forth between the leaks that come from the Palin people in the McCain campaign and the McCain people in the McCain campaign about what kind of person Palin is. And as you said, they've called her a diva. They said she's going rogue, that she's off script, and that they've had that she was so catastrophically ignorant about national issues that they had to decide whether she was going to be presented as a robot on one hand, just mouthing campaign platitudes, or if they were going to let her be her and come off as a complete ignoramus. And most recently, a McCain staffer leaked to thepolitico.com that she was, quote, a whack job. Now, this is not what Democrats are saying about her. And in fact, Democrats have taken a hands-off approach. They have avoided attacking Palin at all costs on the argument that when your opponent is self-destructing, get out of their way.
Right.
It's really amazing that all of this is happening. And I think it does suggest that the McCain campaign is already anticipating defeat, and they're looking for ways to blame this. And Sarah Palin is a convenient person to blame this on. But then again, who picked Sarah Palin? John McCain did. And he did so, as we talked about a couple months ago, last time I was here, on the basis of no vetting. I mean, there was no process whatsoever. And even in that moment of enthusiasm at the beginning, I think it was pretty clear that it was a really, really bad pick. As time has gone on, I think we've come to see that she is a very ambitious politician. She really is in this much more for herself than she is for John McCain. And in fact, she said that she was going to run in 2012, because if she didn't, this was all for nothing, suggesting that she really doesn't care so much about this campaign as she does setting herself up for a future race. Now, I think Mitt Romney will be the Republican nominee in 2012, assuming that Obama wins this time. Mm-hmm. I think Mitt Romney fits the bill for who Republicans nominate. They almost always go with the next guy in line of succession. They like older candidates. They like people with business experience. And Mitt Romney hits those buttons and is also moving himself to be a kind of culture warrior, strong on national security kind of candidate, and he looks the part. He looks like a TV newscaster. So for all those reasons, I think Mitt Romney is really the guy. Sarah Palin will get involved, but the question is, can she run a coherent campaign? And on the basis of 2008, I think we have reason to think she may not be able to.
We are almost out of time, and you are almost out of time with regards to this election. If you haven't voted in early voting, go vote. Do so on Tuesday, November 4th. We're not going to tell you who to vote for. Just vote. You know, I voted for Gracie Allen myself, the straight surprise party ticket.
Amen.
Thank you, Doc.
Thanks, Jen. It's great to be here.
Dr. Rob McDaniel, Associate Professor of Political Science at MTSU. I'm Jenna Logue. This is MTSU On the Record. Join us again at the same time next Sunday. Don't forget, we're available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.